thank you so much for coming tonight. I appreciate your presence. We're going to be looking at the fourth chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. And what we're seeing in this book is that the writer is taking us to look at the reality of life, to see what really is here, being honest about what you, when you look under the sun and what you see, he's telling us what we see. And he brings up things that sometimes we don't like to think about or to look at, but really, he's given us an honest perspective of really what, if you turn for a moment to Romans, the 8th chapter, the 8th chapter of Romans, of course, is the mountain peak of the book of Romans, because he brings us up to the spirit of a conqueror, how we're more than conquerors, and how we ought to think and how we ought to live in this world. But the writer tells us in the 8th chapter of the book of Romans, in verse 20, he says there, "For the creation was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope. Because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." So here's a picture of what God has done to the world. Sin's come into the world, and God has subjected this world to vanity. And he did that in reason of hope, hoping that what he would do is, you see what this life does, how life is, and what sin has done to this world, and you look at all the dishonesty and the oppression, all the problems, it'll make you realize, I want something else. I want something better. I want to go somewhere. Have you ever thought about hell is going to be the reality of people, that their desires will never be satisfied? If I understand what hell is, you will always be longing to be free and longing to see the light and longing to get away from the suffering and the pain, and you never will. Your desires will never be satisfied in hell. But if you go to heaven, every desire, longing to be with people you have loved and never to say goodbye to them ever again as you have in this world, and to never suffer pain, never be alone, never go off into the dark, never get sick, never die. Think about what heaven satisfies, every real longing about what essential living really is. And so what we're doing tonight is we're going to look at some more pictures in the fourth chapter of Ecclesiastes, where the writer just turns, takes us back into looking at the reality of life, and he's picking up, really. I'm kind of chopping this up into chapters. But if you notice, the fourth chapter really continues to tell us about the oppression that we saw in the third chapter. And so the first three verses kind of carry this same idea over when he says, I'm on the wrong page, in the fourth chapter in verse 1, "So I returned and considered all the oppression that are under the sun, and behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter, and on the side of their oppressor there was power, but they had no comforter." And notice here he says, now let me tell you, I want you to think about oppression. I want you to think about all the oppression. Now just for a moment, start piling up. I wish I could just spend some time tonight telling you about I've been in the third world many times and many weeks in those parts of the world. I one time was going down the road and saw a man who had a narrow fibromatosis. He was laying completely naked on the side of the road, and there were all these nerve endings, that every nerve ending on his body's fingers had grown out. And there were fingers all over this man's body everywhere, and they were wiggling. He was screaming, and he had his hand in a metal pot. He was beating it on the street in the hot sun, and he couldn't speak. He was begging. And I just felt so broken to think that that is the existence of a human being born and made in the image of God, for somebody to live that way. First time I went to India and got my first taste of the third world culture shock. I got off of the airplane in Hyderabad, India, late at night. Well, I guess it was at 4 o'clock in the morning. And this man said, "You men have to go over and sit on that bus over there in the dark for about 45 minutes, then it will take you off to a train station." And I looked over there, and at nighttime, all the current is cut down on the public's energy, so the power can be given to the power company so they can make things and do things. And so all the street lights are dim and low. And so I could look out there, and it looked like that the ground was a moving sea, a dark moving sea. I thought, what in the world am I seeing out there? And as I began to walk over there, I saw it was a sea of people. One man, an eye had been gouged out, you could tell, and he had a patch over it, and things were running down his face, and he was crying and screaming and pulling on me to give him money. another little boy came up and his hand had been, looked like run over by a cart, and two fingers were hanging down real low by skin, and he was holding it up in my face. Another person was standing off in the distance and hollering something. I'm sure he was saying unclean because I could see he was a leper. And I just crawled through this crowd of people and got up on a bus and sat on a bus. And while I was sitting on the bus, people were reaching through the window, pulling on me, tugging on me, trying to get me to give them money. Now, I didn't have a lot of money to start with. And I remembered that Jesus said, the poor you have with you always. If I'd taken that money I had and given them, I couldn't have preached the gospel and gone where I needed to go. But I saw all this oppression, all this suffering in the world. And I couldn't sleep for about 3 days after I went through that crowd of people. But just for a moment, think about all the human suffering in the world. Think about all the suffering that goes on. You know, God sees every bit of it. In wars, in pestilence, and diseases, and famines, God sees all of it. Now think about that. Think about living in a world where somebody's calling to our attention to think about all the oppression. And with the oppressors, these people we're looking at who are oppressed in some way, some evil or something has happened to them, somebody is stepping on them in some way or another, that there is nobody to comfort them. Have you ever thought about what it is to be a human being and to see somebody else? And for me, what was troubling me most of all the night I was sitting there was to see the tears that were running down the faces of every person I saw in that sea of people. Tears running down. There was not a person smiling in the crowd. Tears running down their face. And to think that they are human beings made in the image of God just like me, and by the grace of God, I could have been born in India and I could be in that parking lot myself. And so I had compassion. And so I don't know if you're like me when somebody's crying somewhere. I don't know what they're crying about. If they cry very long, I start crying. I don't know what they're crying about, but they're just something about when people are hurt and broken, it bothers me. It's a part of being a human being. And what we should all do when we see somebody suffering, and when we see the tears of somebody, and you know in most parts of the world where people are like that, what happens is that people are often driven away. People drive these people away. They had to get off in that parking lot. They couldn't get around the airport because they were bothering people coming from the airport. And so they had to drive them over in that parking lot, you see. And so nobody had compassion for these people. And so there was nobody to defend for these people and take care of them. And if somebody would have done it, if I'd went over to the airport and said, listen, let's get some people together and gather up some money and do something for these people. Well, somebody would have said, you get off the property of the airport and you get away from here, because I was beginning to do what they were not going to do, see. And so if we think about the fact that what we should all do is realize when somebody's suffering generally, there's not anybody else looking around who will comfort somebody like that. You know, it doesn't cost anything to comfort somebody. When somebody's brokenhearted and troubled and struggling with something in life, it doesn't cost anything to go and take their hand, look them in the eye and tell them you love them. Tell them that God loves them. God knows what's going on. And one day, God's going to make all things right. Don't you worry. I know it looks bad, Dave, but don't you worry. And so here's the picture of Solomon telling us. And think about in his day, what it must have been like, where there were people, mountains of people in a lot of places, who were in, I've preached in leper colonies in Hyderabad, India. And I just can't tell you about what that was like. I'll just tell you one story. It always impressed me about when Jesus touched the leper in Matthew the 8th chapter, and what that did to the crowd of people because Jesus touched him. I was in a place called Rajeswarapuram in India, preaching under this big tree, and while we were preaching to people, herds of goats would go through the crowd of people, and people would raise up and look over the goat while we're preaching. And they just nothing distracted them. Now today, if a baby cries, everybody's distracted. But in India, you can be preaching. I mean, one time the police raided the crowd we were preaching in, and people just were looking around the policemen. The policemen were swinging clubs, hitting people. They were looking around the people. People were not distracted by anything. They wanted to hear the gospel. But this boy was in the back, and I noticed I could see the white sores on him. And so I said to the translator, I said, he was standing back when people would get back there close to him. He wanted to hear the preaching. He would cover his mouth and say something to people. And I knew he was probably saying in Telugu, unclean, or something like that, or get away from me. And so I went back to the back, and he looked like my oldest son, John. I thought, I've just got to shake this boy's hand and tell him how glad I am that he's here. And so I walked up to him and stuck my hand out. And I said, son, let me shake your hand. And he said something and stepped back from me. I told the translator, tell him what I said. And he said something and he stepped back. I stepped toward him one more time. And I said, let me tell you how glad I am that you're here to hear the gospel. And so he stepped back again. And this time when he stepped back, tears started flowing down his face. And I stepped toward him and I took his hand. He reached out and took my hand. When that happened, people went, oh! Everybody was stirred by that because I had just touched a leper. They said nobody had touched that boy in 7 years. His mother and father wouldn't touch him. He's not allowed to go into his house. He lives out on the edge of the woods. People drop food out on the edge of the woods for him. And that's what this young 12-year-old boy was doing. But see, when you show compassion to somebody, when you reach out to somebody, here's a picture of what you see in the world. Does it get your attention to think about when you look at the world, what has caused the human suffering in the world? Sin has brought suffering in the world. It ought to make us hate sin. Some people hate God. God cares. But God has let this world take its own course so we will learn. Sin brings human suffering. Sin has made a mess out of things. And I want to go someplace where sin can't touch it anymore. And so the writer, and that's why God's taking us into these pictures to show us that what we need to see, the reason the world's what it is, so we won't want to live and won't want to chase this world and make this our home and make this everything what life is about. We need to look beyond this world. And so the writer says in verse 2, wherefore I praise the dead which are already dead more than the living which are yet alive. Yea, better is he than both they, which hath not yet been, who hath not yet seen the evil work that is done under the sun. And notice he said, I'll tell you, it's something. The people that are already dead, well, they're blessed more than the people that have to live in this mess. But I'll tell you what, he said, even better if somebody hadn't even come into it and seen it yet, you see. And it makes you think, why do people? A week ago or 2 weeks ago, I preached a funeral for a 26-year-old boy in Madison who was a Christian who had committed suicide. And he was sick. He had a lot of emotional problems, and I tried my best, and others did too, to help him. But he was so emotionally sick by things that had happened to him, he finally took his life. But when you think about this picture here of people looking at the human suffering and sometimes what happens to them and the emotional trouble they have. You know, some people are sick physically. We can see that. Some people are sick emotionally. And they're just like the Good Samaritan came and picked the man that was beaten on the road. Some people need to be picked up because they've been beat up emotionally. Maybe somebody else beat them up. Maybe they beat themselves up. But they need a Good Samaritan to come along and try to give them some hope. Because the picture here is sometimes you think, you know, it's just better off not to come into the world. Because you see what sin has done to the world. And so when Solomon sees this, he says, it's vanity to see what is under the sun and what is going on, the trouble and the problems that are here. But now notice he turns to look at another picture, and he's telling us here four times in this chapter, he's going to tell us, I'm not here looking under the sun. I'm just telling you what I'm seeing. Now I want you to know what I see next. Again, I considered all the travail that every right work, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor, and this is also vanity and vexation of spirit. The fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh. Better is a handful with quietness than both hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. And so here's the picture now of looking at the world and looking at somebody going out in the world, and somebody goes to work and they're industrious and they're trying to do good and they're a good hard worker and honest and dedicated to what they do. As a result, that sometimes people do well. And if you do well, let me tell you what you will find out. If you do well in the world and you are a success at that, people are not going to like that about you. People just generally don't like. My mother gave me an old car, and I took this old car and fixed it up, and I painted it, and I put a real nice paint job, and I mean, I buffed that thing out. It looked like a mirror, and I drove it over to Walmart to get something at the store, and parked it next to this old truck there, you know, and went inside the store, and when I came out, I walked down the side of my car, and there was a scratch from the front all the way to the front end where somebody had taken either a pocket knife or a car key and put the, I said, well, I looked at it and thought, well, I'm sure glad that's over. I don't have to worry about nobody scratching my car anymore. And so I ran the other side. I said, well, the other side still looks pretty. I'll look at it all the time. But, you know, you can focus on the scratch, you know. And you need to understand if you've got something nice, some people are not going to like that. That's just the way. Don't be bothered by that. That's the way it is. If you're industrious and you work hard and you're good at what you do, people are not going to like that. They're not going to like you. And so realize that's a part of the chasing after the wind under the sun the way it is. And this is just the real picture of what you see in life under the sun. And so he says he sees this man that away, and some are envious. And I'll tell you what we ought to think about in that. Envious, the idea of lust or to be zealous, something like that. Sometimes that lust is a good thing. Have you ever thought about that? To be zealous or jealous? God is zealous. God is jealous for his people. And so I tell people when I see somebody successful, I look at him and I say, I'm glad that old boy. Matter of fact, I'm going to try to be like that old boy. He motivates me to turn it up a little bit. Sometimes I've been in some of these lectureships with some real important big name preachers, and that makes me have to dig in and work hard, try to come up to where they are, you see. And so you just see sometimes what you should do is when you see somebody, you want to say, well, thank God. Especially if they're a Christian, because they're on your team. They're helping you, you see. So let's don't let that get into us. The world's going to let that get in. But you have the attitude. You'd be glad when somebody, you heard about the old boy said his neighbor got a new car. He said to his wife, I wish I had that old boy's new car, and he had this wart on my nose on his nose, you know. Well, that's the way we do. We just get jealous of people. We want them to have our bad. We want their good. And so notice, after he says that people will do that, he said this also is vanity and vexation of spirit. But here's another fellow. Here's a fellow in the world, and he said, the fool folded his hands together to eat his own flesh. Here's a picture of what looks out in the world, and he sees people doing well. And so what he becomes a dropout. I picked up a street person one time. He was hitchhiking. And I was driving on the car, I picked him up. I said, where are you going? Well, I said, going to Louisville. I said, up your business. Buddy. He said, I live under the bridge down there in Louisville. I said, you live under the bridge? He said, yeah, I got a little cardboard place down there. I live under. When it gets cold weather, I go down to Florida and stay, and I come back to Louisville, my hometown. And he said, well, what do you do for a living? He said, I don't do anything. He said, I got a college education, and I like to read and keep sharp on all that. But he said, I said, well, what in the world are you doing? He said, well, I don't want to have a house to keep up, my family to take care of. I don't want to pay taxes. I don't want to fool on. I just want to sit down and sit on the corner, let somebody give me something, just kind of get by. He was a dropout. He was like the hippies in the 60s, just sitting around doing nothing, you see. And so here's a picture of somebody who looks at the world, and because maybe life hadn't handed him, and I tell people, if anybody didn't live in the world that wasn't handed much in life, it would have been me. Because I went to school, I couldn't read, I wasn't smart. I went through high school and couldn't read. I thought I was going to go to prison because I didn't know how to get a job, couldn't fill an application. I had all kind of problems. I didn't know what was wrong with me. Something was wrong with me. And so I could have said, well, I'll just be a dropout. I'll just sit under the bridge with this old boy. But you see, we need to understand no matter what's dealt to you and what's given to you, you get up and you make something out of it. Whatever you've got, make the best out of it. Do something with it. Try to improve it. Try to work at it. Find something you can do, something you can be good at. You might be shocked at what God will do. I've always said that old one talent boy in that Matthew 25 chapter, you know what the parable is showing us? It's the one talent people the Lord's fussing at. People got five. This preacher over here, you all got, he's a five talent boy, and he's going to a lot more respect in him than is me. I'm just a one talent guy. And so because he's educated and smart and knows things and can read and write, he can go over to college and talk to educated people and do a lot of good. I can't do any good over there. And so here's somebody that God expects a lot of, but I better use my one talent. God made me a simple person. I'm just using my simple life to help other people. That's all I've got. And so when somebody sees that the one talent people sometimes sit in the kingdom of God and don't do anything, we ought to be the ones to dig our talent up out of the ground and go to work and invest it in something. That's what the Lord wants us to do. So here's a picture of somebody being a dropout in life. But notice then he tells us, after showing us that this old boy, it's kind of like I've told this story about in the country. My grandpa told about an old boy years ago. He was real lazy, and he went to town and bought some seed corn. If you all know, you farmers know what I'm talking about. Come time to plant, you go and you get your seed corn and you bring it to the house. And so you keep it there, you know. Well, it rained a couple of weeks. No boy sat around, didn't do anything, kind of got a little lazy sitting around. And so he got a little hungry, and so his wife said, well, we don't have anything to eat, so why don't you go to town and get some? He said, oh, just boil that seed corn. We'll eat the seed corn. Well, he ate up his seed corn. What was he going to do with the rest of the year? He ate up what he needed. So you can sit around and eat your seed corn and don't have anything to plant, nothing to live on. Take what you got and plant it. Do some good with it, you see. So here's a picture of what can happen to you with your attitude in the world. But now notice, here's the lesson to learn about all that. Better is a handful with quietness than both handfuls with travail and vexation of spirit. A fellow built my daddy's house, helped us work my daddy's house years ago. He was a builder, and I'd ask him how he'd been doing. He said, well, I'm doing good now. He said, I got crazy for a while. He said, I started building houses, and I started doing well. I started hiring people on. I got several crews, and got doing more and more. And I got several more crews, and I got up to where I was making $400,000 a year, and then I got up to making about a half $1 million a year. And he said, I was people calling me all night long, and people trying to sue me, and all kind of problems, and my workers wouldn't come to work. They were stealing from me. And he said, I thought, what in the world am I doing? He said, I fired all those people, and I just started going back to doing what I was doing, framing houses myself. He said, I'm so happy, so content now. People are not trying to sue me because I don't have all that money. And he said, I've just learned that it's just good enough to have just what you need. If you could learn that life is so simple. I told about a friend of mine. He asked me how long it took me to mow my grass. I said, I can mow my yard in 22 minutes with a push mower. He said, well, I'll tell you what he said, I don't have enough time to mow my grass. He said, it takes all my time to mow my grass. He said, what do you think my problem is? He said, you think I got too much grass? I said, no, you just got too much. That's what you got. You got too much of everything, old buddy. And so what we need to see is just learn, simplify life. Keep it simple. You don't need a big spot to where you hide off yourself trying to take care of it. Just keep life simple and don't make it so difficult. And just be satisfied with what you got, whatever it is. And then the writer says to us, he turns now to look at something else. Then I returned and saw vanity under the sun. There is one man that and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother. Yea, there is neither his eyes not satisfied with riches. Neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is a vanity. Yea, it is a sore travail. Now here's an old boy. He's out here working and killing himself. I heard about an old boy one time that did that. He started out raising chickens, and he got to raising chickens, got doing more and more, and got to making more of that. And he ended up having a big chicken farm, and he took some of that money after a while, and he ended up raising hogs, got a big hog farm. And so he got to where he found ways to make money, and he just enjoyed making money. And so one day one old boy said, well, you still working? And he was an old man. He said, yeah, I'm still working. He said, well, what are you going to do with all that money you got? He said, you got so much money, you'll never spend it. He said, well, I don't enjoy spending money, but I just enjoy making it. This old boy, he said, well, who are you going to leave it to? He didn't have any family. He said, well, when I'm gone, I don't know who's going to get it, but hope they enjoy spending it as much as I enjoyed making it. But you see, here's an old boy just found ways to make money. There's nothing wrong with making money. And there's nothing wrong with doing good with it. But when you just become consumed by it and you forget that there are people and there's a life and your children, spending time with your children and doing things with brethren and all those things. And so you just get so preoccupied with making money, you become lost. And one day you're going to say, why in the world did I do it? What's the advantage of it? It's vanity. It's just a vanity, you see. It's empty to do that. Don't live that kind of a life. Don't work all the overtime. You can work all the time and miss the church services and become so busy your children don't know you. Don't live that kind of a life. And that's vanity to live that way. And then notice he says something else about that. He says to us in the next verse down there in verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good reward of their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. And again, if two lie together, they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? And if two prevail against him, if one prevail against him, two shall withstand them. And threefold cord is not quickly broken. Now, notice here's just a fundamental picture about taking cord and twisting it, and how the two people are better than one. Have you ever tried to do something by yourself? I tell you, I'm so glad I'm married. I have done so many things. I've done jobs. I told about my wife and I living a little years ago. We put drywall and some ceiling up like this, you know. And I was down on one side, up, kind of up. And she was at the other. And we had I was crazy. I got some of those 12-foot sheets, you know. And we were trying to hold it up. And I was getting ready to nail a nail. And she'd drop her in. And it would drop and bust. And so I'd get out. I said, baby girl, you okay? She said, yeah. I said, you want to try it again? She said, yeah, I'm okay. So we got up there and got the next sheet up. And I got ready to nail it. Well, she dropped it and it did again. And finally, I walked over to her and I grabbed hold of her. And I got hold of her arms. I said, baby girl, are you okay? She started crying. And I squeezed her arms. And I went like that. And then I got home at the wall. I see what the trouble is here. I'm overworked. I didn't marry a mule. I married a woman, see? But I tell you what, she helped me do a lot of things. She's helped me. I couldn't do more. If you all watch my wife when I'm preaching, you probably wondered, where's my notes? My wife is lip singing my sermon. I'm reading her lips. That's what I couldn't do what I'd do without her. But here's a picture of somebody who learns two are better than one. And that's not just in marriage, it's in friendship. And notice he goes on to say, he illustrates it by saying, in verse 10, if the one fall, he have one to lift him up. But woe to him so long he has not another to help him. I was telling about years ago when I was some young kids out sleigh riding one winter, had on a pair of cowboy boots, and we'd slide down this long hill and go across the creek and go up the other side. And so we were going back up to take another ride, me and this young boy. And so I was walking across that creek, and when I stepped on my leather boots, while my feet shot out in front of me, and I tried to fly, you know, like that. And I hit that ice, and when I did, that creek broke, and I went through that ice and got stuck in that cold ice, and it knocked the breath out of me. Well, my old buddy, he was a little behind me. He saw me, and he saw that. So he oh, Mr. Sandusky, I said, I'm sorry, I can't help but laugh. He said, are you okay? And I said, I'd knocked the breath out of myself and couldn't speak. And finally, I caught my breath, and I said, oh, buddy, grab me by the ankles and pull me out of here. I'm stuck. I can't get loose. If I'd been by myself, I'd have died there. I couldn't get out of that hole I was stuck in. And I'm going to tell you, you're going to get some more life. You're going to fall down. And you're going to wish somebody. You're going to wish somebody was a friend close by that you could count on when you fall down in life. Let me tell you, friendship is valuable. Getting to know people, things are going to pass away, but people are going to last. And so the writer says to us, not only is that a principle, but in verse 11, and again, if two lie together, they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? I told y'all, my wife and I lived in Germany when we started our marriage. We lived in a little two-room apartment, in Germany, and at nighttime, the Germans turn the heat off to save energy, and they just get under their blankets, and that's how they survive. And so at nighttime, our apartment, we'd set a glass of water on the kitchen table, and it would freeze. Our refrigerator was a cardboard box in the hallway, and our eggs and milk would sometimes freeze in it. But we would go. We might get in a fuss about 6 o'clock at night about something. And she'd go in that little kitchen area, little kitchen with a couch in it. And I'd go in there in the bedroom. And we wouldn't be talking. Now you can get silly and not talk to each other. But I'm going to tell you what. When it come bedtime, old buddy, we was friends again. Because we knew we'd die of pneumonia if we stayed apart through the night. I'm going to tell you. It's a principle of life. This is the way life is. And then notice he says also in verse 12, and if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. Have you ever had somebody bother you and have somebody with you so they won't bother you? You know, if you're by yourself, somebody will take advantage of you, but if somebody's with you, people are probably going to. That's why I always travel overseas with somebody going with me. I don't care for a nut. I want somebody with me. If they're crazy, I don't care. Just go with me, would you? I want somebody there. And so Jesus sent the people out two by two. He saw the value in this, you see. And so here's a picture, don't you see, of what the world tells us. And the lesson to learn is this. Threefold cord. Have you ever looked at barbed wire? You know why barbed wire holds cattle in? I know there's a barb on there. But if you look at that cable that's wound into, it's a piece of cable that is wound like that. And that cable is very strong. It'll be stretched very tight. And it's very strong. And if you take three strands, you can stretch it further and stretch it tighter. If you take four strands, have you ever seen some of these cables and ropes on ships in the ocean? These ropes that hold ships in the harbor, these big old ropes that's that big around in mass, and we're on the river, and I've found a lot of those old ropes down there. You can't imagine what you can do with a rope like that. Well, I'm going to tell you, your life's the same way. You just keep twining people into your character. Wind them up into your friendship. You make all the friends you can make in the world. And when you get into trouble, you'll find out, boy, I tell you, threefold cord sure is great. It gives you great strength in life. That's what it does. But now notice in verse 13 he says, better is a poor and wise child than an old foolish king who will no more be admonished, for out of prison he cometh to reign, whereas also that is born in his kingdom becometh poor. I consider all the living which walk under the sun, with the second child that shall stand up in his stead. There is no end to all the people, even of all that have been before them. They that come after shall not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Here's a picture of popularity and political pictures. I mean, you can have a couple people running for president who are about to go to prison. And some of them come out of prison. You look, I've been in South Africa where a man lived in prison for years, came out and became the president of South Africa. And you know, he came out of the prison, became a president. And so what happened is that everybody followed him. But you know what happened after a while? Those old guys like me, see, we get old and we're kind of hard to tell something to. You can't tell an old fella can just get hard-headed and be stubborn and can't tell him anything. And that's what people, let me tell you, old folks, don't become a grumpy old man. Don't let that happen to you. You can get grumpy in your old age. You can get cynical because you've been burned many times. Don't let life do it to you. You listen. You learn from people. You love people. I learn a lot of my sermon illustration from a little bit of kids. Talking to kids, I learn a lot about the Bible. Listen to what kids say. But if you will see the danger of getting old and think, well, I'm the king and I'm not going to listen to anybody. I'm not going to tell you. And so people get sick of somebody like that and they want to throw them overboard. And so here comes some old young boy. He comes out of poverty. Nobody knows him. He's been in prison. He doesn't have a good reputation. He comes up and he starts speaking tall, and talking big and saying things. Oh, let's all run after that old boy. And so the whole crowd chasing, run after this new guy, and they want to get rid of the old guy. They put that new guy in, and he gets old, see. And what happens when he goes down the pike a little while? They want to throw him overboard too. I know Madison's going to throw me overboard pretty soon. I'm old. They're getting tired. I've been there 40 years. They're tired of me. They want to pitch me overboard, get some young boy who knows something, see? That's the way life is. Don't be afraid to jump overboard when it's time to go. I tell my wife, tell me when I got to give it up. She said, hey, you're getting awful close. And so we just need to see this is the way. This is the way life is, you see. And so the writer helps see even in this, in popularity and in politics, It's everything in life. There's vanity and vexation to it. And so there's trouble and there's difficulty trying to stay on track when you see what Christianity is all about. Let me tell you this story. It's a true story. You can get on the internet and find this report of an insurance report of an old boy I love to tell about who was remodeling his house. And he had an upstairs up there with a deck on it. He was going to remodel the inside. So he went up there and put a big old barrel up on there on the deck. He took some rope and tied onto it and put it through, pulling through the rope down to the ground. He went down on the ground and he tied that rope to a tree with a slip knot. So he went back up there. He loaded that barrel up with all the drywall and things in there. And he got the barrel full. He pushed it off the deck out there. It was hanging by that rope. Well, he went down to the bottom, down at the ground. He got a hold of that slip knot. He thought, I'm going to grab this rope and jerk it loose. And when it does, I know it's going to jerk. I'm going to hang on to it. And I'm going to hang on until I, you know, hold it and I'm going to lower it down. When he jerked that knot, he didn't think about the fact that he weighed 170 pounds and the barrel weighed 270 pounds. So when he jerked the knot loose, hanging onto it, he went up in the air, left the ground, went up, and the barrel come down, hit his arm, and took him up to the top. He went up the top, holding onto the rope, and the barrel hit the ground, and the bottom came out of it. Now the barrel weighed 17 pounds. He weighed 170. So the barrel starts coming up, and he hits and breaks his leg on the barrel going down, and he hits the ground. He's sitting on the ground holding that rope, and he says to himself, why in the world did I hold onto this rope and he let go? And let me ask you something. Why? Why hold on to something that you feel like it's about to kill you? Why hold on to something you feel like it's just about to defeat you? Why do it? I'll tell you why. Some things are worth holding on to and never letting go. You hold on to God. I don't care how much it beats on you, how weary you get, how frustrated you become. Don't you let go. You just hang on. If you're tonight and you're not a Christian, can you see what we're calling you to come to? It's a great kingdom that's eternal. You can obey the gospel tonight, and if you already obeyed the gospel and you're a Christian, you haven't been what you ought to be, why don't you just turn that thing up tonight and make that right. Go home, get on your knees and tell God you're sorry. Get busy. If you need to respond in any way, if we can help you, why don't you come? I'll stand and sing this song in church.